Chapter 48. Harem. The warrior's harem is much as I had imagined from my brother's descriptions. Dimly lit, the air is thick and cloying with incense and the scented smoke of great water pipes. Women move through the haze in various states of undress from their brightly coloured silk robes and diaphanous veils. They are beautiful, and it is no wonder they hold the men entranced. There is artistry in their movements, clothing, and powder kit, in the music they play, and the strength and complexity of their seductive dance. The men speak of conquests among the Jiwa Sharum, but seeing them with my own eyes, I know the lie. These women have power the men do not understand. My role is to be seen enjoying the harem as a man, but watching the women undulate and writhe atop small podiums reminds me of laughing with Selin in my chambers as Mika and Kendall tried to teach us the Krasian pillow dance. I remember the steps, and part of me wants to snap my hips to the beat of the music as I cross the room. With no call to muster, most of my spear brothers have come to the harem tonight, lying in the pillows among pipes and bottles of kuzi as they are attended by the Jiwa Sharum.
"Prince Olive!" Gorvan booms.
I turn to see him beside a large water pipe with a thinly clad Jiwa Sharum on his lap. Her hand is somewhere in the older boy's robes, and I don't want to think about where. The other men give a cheer when they see me. Thivan most of all.
"I bet Thivan 50 drachi you'd never come down here,"
Gorvan says loudly. I force a laugh I do not feel.
"Then you are a fool, Gorvan, for when would you collect?"
Everyone roars with laughter at that, Gorvan most of all.
"Come, my Kai, share kuzi with us."
I still can't see the woman's hand. I don't drink kuzi, Gorvan, and I came to watch pillow dancers, not smell your fetid breath. Again, laughter all around, as Madana appears to attend me.
"Welcome, Your Highness. You honour us with your presence. Of course it is beneath you to sit with the Dal Sharum."
She leads me through a curtain to a more private chamber, with a bed of pillows and cool water to drink.
"We are not often honoured with princes," Madana says. "What will ease your burdens? A massage, perhaps?"
I shake my head. Even in the Greenlands, we have tales of Krasian pillow dancing. I would like to see it with my own eyes. Madana's eyes crinkle with pleasure.
"Of course, Highness. All my brides will take a turn dancing for you, that you may pick your favourites to attend you."
I watch a steady progression of dancers, some more skilled or more beautiful than others. At another time, I might have enjoyed it more. Perhaps more than I am comfortable with. But tonight, tension sickness drives off any chance of arousal. I'm less interested in their bodies than I am in their clothes, their jewellery, the way they paint their eyes and braid their hair, the scents they use, the curtains they go behind to change and apply their powders. I leave the harem close to dawn. No alarms have sounded, so I assume Chika has yet to be discovered. Drunken Sharum dying accidental deaths is a sadly common occurrence, but I am not fool enough to think the subterfuge will buy more than a few hours. Whoever sent Chika will come for me once he is found. My only hope is to disappear. I leave Chadan's palace before first light, crossing the city in twilight. Demons tend to return to the core long before the sky begins to brighten, and it's unthinkable for them to penetrate all the way into the powerfully warded palace districts in any event. But curfew is in effect until dawn. I am thankful for the empty streets, reaching the gates of the holy city right at dawn. It is the first day of waning, and the white-sleeved guards admit me all the way to Sharikhora without comment.
I head for the temple's lavish harem, as if I were going to call on Mika, but turn away from the gate and move around the wall instead. My Nisharum training and the strength of my fingers is enough to get me over the wall into the private gardens. But my Sharum blacks will stand out among all the women in colored silk like a night wolf among sheep. The sacred harem's eunuch guards wear only tan beedos and golden shackles on their wrists and ankles, but all are powerfully built and trained in Sharusark. Stout batons hang from thongs at their waists. They will descend upon me if I move about the gardens like this, and I will be quickly overwhelmed. Fortunately, I came prepared. My trip to the harem was more than an excuse to be seen. I had my first proper bath in months and snuck into the changing room, tucking some silks and a powder kit into my robes. I slip into a secluded garden bower to change. Outside, Crasian women all dress in plain blacks, but within the harem, fashion is power, a sign of one's position and status. The stylish but conservative robes of young unwed girls of high blood and marriageable age are not so different from the dresses worn by well-bred girls at court in Hollow. Brightly coloured silks decorated with wardwork, lace and bangles, flowing scarves and glittering jewellery, intricately patterned fans. These stand in sharp contrast with the provocative, if not outright scandalous, diaphanous robes of young pillow brides still called upon often by their husbands. I catch flashes of bare flesh as their thin veils flow around them like smoke. Their belts tinkle with the tiny finger symbols used in the pillow dance. Moving with stately grace among these are the elder Jiwa Ka, as dignified and aloof as the high ladies of Mother's Court. Their fine conservative robes are thick but colourful, the quality and cut signifying status, wealth, and power over the other women. Pillow wives may have their husband's favour, but first wives have his purse and dominion over his household. The women of the great harem of Sharik Hora run the full spectrum, especially on waning, when all are dressed in their finest to receive their husbands, brothers, and sons. Already, many of them await family in visiting chambers just outside the harem proper. I've chosen the transparent blue silks of a pillow bride, gossamer cloth the colour of clear sky, accented with a carefully woven silk beedo and short velvet vest the colour of deep water. I feel scandalous, and naked for lack of armour, but it will keep eyes where I want them, and away from places I don't. My thin veil is opaque, complementing the vest and beedo, disguising my face without seeming as if I have anything to hide. A stolen wig covers my short hair with a proper bride's long tresses. I cover that with a blue scarf that softens my muscular shoulders and arms. The costume jewellery I borrowed from the Jiwa Sharum will not pass close inspection among the rich brides of the great harem, but it is riskier to go without. Setting a piece of silvered glass on the branches of a flower bush, I take out the powder kit, copying the style of paints favoured by young pillow wives, adding a blush to my cheeks and smoky kohl on my eyelids. I extend the lashes and paint my lips, surprising myself at how natural the work is. I haven't touched a paint box in months, but Grandma Milona's lessons are ingrained in memory. Before long, the face in front of me barely resembles Prince Olive the Kai Sharum, calling back to the fashionable girl I was not a year ago, but with eyes less naive. My heart aches for that girl, but she isn't me anymore. Clean, painted, and perfumed, I step out of the bower a completely different person. I add a sway to my hips as I walk, mimicking the confident, seductive gait of a vain young bride. It feels natural, not so different from how Ilona taught me to saunter across a room. Women glance my way as I pass through the gardens, but I have fallen fully into the role and do not fear I will be recognized. On the contrary, the looks I receive range from complimentary to jealous. I hear singing, high and beautiful, and follow the sound, thinking it must lead me to Mika. It is not my sister I find, however, but my niece. Rojva kneels beside a great fountain depicting four larger-than-life warriors, their muscular bodies clad only in veiled turbans and bidos. They hold their shields above them in a diamond formation, deflecting the spray of the fountain in all directions. Rojva is sitting as she brushes out her long, auburn hair. She is clad in the robes of an unwed maiden, a mix of reds to complement her hair and complexion, ranging from deep wine to cinnamon. The cut leaves more to the imagination than my pillow silks, but none would call it demure. At her throat is a choker, much like the one Mika wears. I wonder why it was not taken with the rest of her Hora jewelry, but then I see the red stone and realize it is bloodlocked, much as my armlet. Beautiful singing, sister, I say as I step close to the fountain, glancing this way and that to ensure no one else is about. Welcome. You are new to the harem? Rojva smiles, and she is stunningly beautiful. I suppose you could say that. I was knee darmating, but Charvis stripped me of white. I am captive here, but... She shrugs, running her fingertips over the beautiful red silk robes. In some ways, I have never felt so free. Aye, well, I don't. A familiar voice says at my back. I do not start, turning casually to look at Selen over the security of my veil. Her hair is braided with bands of gold, and the edge of her headscarf is trimmed with warded coins. She looks beautiful, but I can tell my tall friend is decidedly uncomfortable in her green maiden robes. They strain against her powerful frame, and she moves awkwardly in the layers of veil. But while I'm looking at her, Selen takes a good look at me and crosses her arms. About time you showed up. Least you look more like yourself this time. You know this woman? Rojva asks. Selen snorts. Rojva, meet your Aunt Olive. Rojva's head whips around, eyes narrowing as she scrutinizes my face and body. Incredible. Aye, she's got a real gift. Selen makes no effort to mask the anger in her voice. As comfy in a frilly nightgown as a suit of armour. Fancy that. I don't know what to say, so I reach out and grab her instead, pulling my friend into an embrace. She tries to push me away, but I hold fast against her efforts until she gives in and holds me in return. Her voice cracks as she whispers in my ear, "We thought we'd lost you." I know. I fight the tears threatening to spoil my makeup, but I am no more able to keep the choke from my voice than she is. I'm so sorry. I thought you were still safe in Hollow. Now Selen does shove me back. And what? You were going to just stay here, be Prince Olive, and forget everyone who loves you? Mika appears, keeping watch near the entrance to the small plaza, and I realize she must have told them everything. At first I had no choice, I say. I did what I had to. But I found something here, Selen. Something we only tasted when we put on armor and snuck off on the Barator. I'm not the Olive you remember. Demon shit, Selen growls. Ain't been gone 3 months. None of us are the same since the tour. But I don't buy you're a whole new person just because you had a few weeks of brainwashing. It's not brainwashing. I realize the naivety of the words, even as I say them. For of course that is what charage is. Mika said it herself. Drill masters break individuals and rebuild them into a unit where every warrior trusts his life to the shield of the man next to him. It worked on the others, and it worked on me. Even now, I would step in front of a pack of demons for any of my spear brothers. But then, the drill master tried to kill me. I'm not a whole new person, I allow at last, but I'm not the spoiled, anxious, emotional princess of Hollow anymore either. I can't go back to being her.
Don't care about that, Selin says. Come home whoever you like. Just come home.
Darren told me the same thing, I say. I wasn't ready to listen last night. But I am now.
Glad to hear it,
a voice says from above. I look up to see Darren rise from his perch in the shadow at the center of the Fountain Warrior's shields. He is doused in the fountain's spray, but the water seems to simply slide off him. He leaps down, and his clothes aren't even wet.
Course born it, Darren Bales, I say, but I'm more irritated at myself for letting him get the drop on me again. I told you to go back to Arik.
Eh, you did, Darren agrees.
Problem is, you don't get to tell me what to do, Olive Paper.
He's right. I've gotten used to giving orders. But these are not my spear brothers or my subjects. They're my friends, my family.
Waning is tonight, I say. Eleveran has commanded every citizen to seek protection in the Holy Undercity for the next 3 nights. It will be chaos, and that is where they will search for me. No one will think to look in the harem. I can hide here in plain sight while we plan our escape.
Mika shakes her head. They might not look for you here, but if you go missing, they will watch the rest of us too closely. There are enough hidden Sharumting passages and safe rooms in the temple to shelter us through waning. We simply need a way out of the bloodlocks. I look to Rojva. Chamber of Shadows was always my worst subject. Is there anything you can do?
I'm not gifted like mother and grandmother, Rojva says. But like my brother and his Comanche, I was given no choice but to practice endlessly. Let me see the lock.
Her soft hands are gentle as she examines the armlet, tracing the lines of the wards with the edge of one painted nail. The armlet is warded to contract if an attempt is made to force the lock, or the wrong blood is used.
I hadn't known that. I think of all the times I've been spattered with blood, all the times I was tempted to sneak into a smith's tent and put a hammer to it. I never had any idea how close I was to amputating my own arm.
Can you remove it? I know it's in my imagination, but I feel it tightening. With a properly sealed Chamber of Shadows to cut off the signal and the right materials, I could disable the wards and free you in, she shrugs, half an hour?
Hope kindles in my breast, but Mika looks skeptical.
And here? She asks. Now, with the tools at hand?
Rojva shakes her head.
Impossible. I look at Darren. Any luck finding Hogroot and Plaster?
Darren shakes his head.
Hogroot's a wild plant. Ain't pretty and smells awful. Not something that grows in a garden like this. Reckon they got some in the Chambers of Healing. But that place is locked up too tight even for me. Give me a few hours, and I can sniff out a gatherer in the bazaar and get what we need.
Too long, Mika says.
When they notice Olive is missing, Belina will track the armlet and find her here. She lifts the hem of her robe, bearing a long stretch of leg. Darren blushes and turns away as she tears off a piece of inner cloth. She lays a hand on Darren's shoulder.
Take this.
Darren looks at the scrap of cloth, and I see it is stitched in a neat, delicate hand with a map of the temple. I meant this for Olive last moon, Mika says, before she decided to stay. We are here, she points at the cloth. Collect Arik and meet us. Her finger slides along passages like she was solving a child's paper maze.
Here, go now.
Darren nods, flitting from shadow to shadow on his way out of the gardens.
How can he meet us if we remain shackled? I ask.
Because I'm going to find Belina, Mika says, and get blood to open the locks. That won't be necessary, a voice replies. One of the thick hedges that surrounded the fountain rolls back as if the branches had a life of their own, revealing a woman clad all in white with a black veil, holding a glowing bit of horror as she stands in the shadows. Bellina.